Welcome to the program for Friday, November 16th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Fridays at 3 o'clock, it's the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by two experts in the world of the federal government. This week, it is Molly O'Neill, Vice President at CGI, and Josh Soslak, Senior Fellow at the Telework Exchange and Director of Clio Strategies. Folks, it's great to see both of you. Molly, you were here, it seems like, about 20 minutes ago.
Well, it was 2 days ago, yes.
It was 2 days ago, but time flies so quickly now. It's great to see you again, and I am looking forward to having you come back. You were here talking about the ACT I Act. Let me see if I can remember. Quadrennial.
Quadrennial Government Technology Review.
Yes. See, I would have never gotten that. And we're going to continue those conversations as we talked about. So it's great to have you here. Good stories that you've chosen. I'm looking forward to talking about them. Josh Soslak, it's nice to see you as well. And you are quite the globetrotter we were talking about before we went on the air.
I'm always excited to go anywhere that I can.
And you're going where?
I'm going to Hong Kong next week.
That's pretty neat.
I'm pretty excited about it.
Travel safely, and we're looking forward to hearing all about that when you get back. And we have the three most important federal news stories of the week that each of you have chosen, and we always start with...
Number three!
Josh Soslak, the third most important federal news story of the week, according to you, is from the Washington Post. The headline is, Congress approves federal whistleblower protections. This is something, we talked about this with WPEA, with the Government Accountability Project. The bill is WPEA. This is something they've been after for 13 years. It's pretty amazing, the stick-to-itiveness that these people have.
Yeah, they've certainly been working on this, and we've seen in a lot of reports that this was very needed. It was supported both externally and also by special counsel. So I think, you know, they really have been trying hard to get this. The Senate passed it, I guess, voice vote last week, and it's gone to the president. I don't know if it's been signed yet. They got some paperwork they got to do, but it's all over but the ink at this point. So it's a pretty good bill. It certainly strengthens protection across the board for whistleblowers. It adds TSA into the covered workers, and it actually adds some teeth into what they can do for going after supervisors who retaliate against whistleblowers. So that's some great stuff in there.
Tom Devine of the Government Accountability Project is quoted in this article, which is linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And I talked to Tom the other day, and he said this bill, I asked him to rate the bill, and he said somewhere between not quite good enough and fine. So there are still some things that they would like to see added in later legislation, but this at least gets the process going.
Yeah, I think there were two things that they were a little upset got pulled from the bill. One was some jury trial language, and the other one was coverage for the national security and the intel workers. But the important thing to remember there is the president actually issued a presidential policy directive and to basically cover the intel and the national security workers, to put some teeth into that. So that should cover at least that issue, unless, I mean, obviously another president could revoke it, but we're good for another 4 years on it.
This story is from Joe Davidson. The headline is Congress approves federal whistleblower protections, from the Washington Post. And it's Josh Soslak's choice for the third most important federal news story of the week. Molly O'Neill, your number three story is from FCW. The headline is Report recommends IT priorities for second term. And I'm just noticing how curious this is. This is about the Quadrennial Government Technology Review.
I believe it's very self-serving. Right?
Huh. You know, one of the reasons that I love having you on the show is because you're honest about it. You wrote that right in the email you sent.
Right.
Number three is very self-serving, but it's important anyway.
Right. And the reason I put it, because, you know, I picked this, is there was quite a little lot of news coverage, the fact that the IT community is putting forth some priorities. But also, if I was reading the news, you know, this week, and there's a lot of other, you know, groups out there trying to position and put out papers for the first time in terms of innovation and technology. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think post-election, we're seeing the fact that a lot of different think tanks and everyone was ready, you know, been working for over the past couple of weeks to, or actually say months, put together some thoughts on really where things need to be moving. The ACT-IACT reports, which is where the Quadrennial Government Technology Review focuses on how technology can be applied into areas of national challenge around education and jobs, around healthcare, around the physical challenges and things like that. So it's really putting a different spin on using technology, not for technology's sake.
And that's the part of this that I've been trying to emphasize over the last couple of years and having a lot more success now, especially from the government side, is government agencies seem to be willing and able and happy in many cases to get out of the bright, shiny object rut that they were in for a long time, it seems to me.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think that, you know, we tend to talk about sort of cuts and cuts and cuts. And if we really need to think about where we need to go and then figure out where to invest and then where to cut in terms of where things aren't working. And we can, you know, use technology then as a force creator and innovation.
One of the things that we got into a little bit on Wednesday, and that conversation's archived on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, is the way that this will change the nature of the CIO's job. The CIO is not going to be an operational person as much, it doesn't seem to me.
That's the recommendation. So
yeah.
The recommendation is we really need to take these up a level and really understand the business of government and the mission of government so that you know, again, it's not just the infrastructure, right? The infrastructure is a very important part to keep secure and, you know, keep it economical, right? But when it comes to actually delivering on mission, we really need to start making really good investments in alignment with the using the, you know, much higher level chief information officer.
There's a collection, actually, of six of these reports as part of this review, and they're linked up, too, on the in-depth page on the website. What's the response been like so far?
It's been really good. I mean, I will say it seems like a lot of people are really looking at the one that's around the deficit mm-hmm. and financial responsibility for obvious reasons. I mean, even post-election, those issues, you know, are not going to go away no matter who won the election, right? And so I think people are really just interested in seeing everyone's looking for solutions, right? And so I think that's one of the ones that has gotten a lot of attention.
Is it your sense that the agencies understand the very high level of seriousness that the budget situation is driving at this point? Because I wonder sometimes if people really are aware of the magnitude of the problem.
Well, I think we see it manifesting in a couple of ways. One is we're seeing a slowdown of work because of uncertainty. And so I think there's a lot of uncertainty more than anything. And so I'm not sure the magnitude is there, but certainly the uncertainty
mm-hmm.
is there.
Makes sense. Molly O'Neill's third most important federal news story of the week is from FCW. The headline is Report Recommends IT Priorities for Second Term. And you can read it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number two of the week is selected by Molly O'Neill and Josh Soslack when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose. Better vision. United Healthcare Vision understands the importance of good eyesight for you and your family. That's why their vision programs offer federal enrollees and their families a convenient mix of independent and retail providers and industry-leading benefits for glasses, contacts, and discounts on LASIK procedures. And new for 2013, standard photochromic lenses that provide 100% UV protection from the sun's damaging rays will be covered at no additional cost. The FedVIP open season period for federal employees and retirees is November 12th through December 10th. Don't miss out on this opportunity to protect your most precious gift, the gift of sight. For more information about their benefit plans and how to enroll, visit United Healthcare Vision on the web at myuhcvision.com/FedVIP. If you want industry-leading vision benefits and a convenient provider network, look no further than United Healthcare Vision this open season.
Eagle Hoops fans, the best seats in Vendor Arena for the 2012-2013 season are just a phone call away. Call the AU Athletics ticket office at 202-885-TIXX today to place your $50 deposit on 2012-2013 season tickets to see AU Eagles men's basketball. Season tickets are the only way to secure the best sideline reserve chair back seats all season long. Place your season ticket deposit at 202-885-TIXX today and buy American.
Why is fiscal stability integral to national competitiveness? How can moving to an Enterprise USA approach in government enhance national competitiveness? Join host Michael Keegan and contributors to the IBM Center book, Governing to Win Next Week, on a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, and find out.
Now that I've moved to Washington, I need a new primary care doctor.
Got it handled.
And a gynecologist with appointment time.
Got it.
And a dermatologist who's taking new patients.
Got it.
And a safe pharmacy, one that doesn't make me nervous when I have to pick up prescriptions late after work.
Got it handled.
Okay, how exactly do you have it handled? It's my first week in Washington, and you have an entire integrated care team for me?
Yep. You just need to enroll in Kaiser Permanente. They have integrated medical teams, some of the best care sites, 24/7 availability for urgent care. They have convenient online tools and a mobile app. And now J.D. Power and Associates rank them highest in member satisfaction among commercial health plans in the Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. region 4 years in a row.
I can get all that just by joining Kaiser Permanente?
You got it.
When it comes to care teams, Kaiser Permanente is clearly the right choice.
For J.D. Power and Associates award information, go to jdpower.com. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States, Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. What the heck is wrong with generals in the military? Pulitzer Prize-winning author Thomas Ricks has written the latest book examining problems in military leadership. He's going to join us with some perspective. And you've heard of entrepreneurial government. Well, we're going to find out about something even newer, anticipatory government. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week. As selected by Molly O'Neill and Josh Soslak, we're up to
number two.
Molly, your second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is Budget Deal Poses Threat to Pay, Benefits, Jobs. It's Sean Riley's piece about where we might be headed. And it's not a pleasant situation. I always think it's fair to mention, though, that federal employees have still never been in the same situation that a lot of people in the private sector were in 2009, 2010, and early 2011. I know I was fortunate to skate through it at this company, but there are a lot of companies in my business that just let people go. I mean, and there were a lot of, in the media, there were a lot of forced 20% salary reductions and those kinds of things, and you didn't get to pick. You either took it or you said you don't, weren't going to work here anymore. And I'm not suggesting that federal agencies should do that, but they maybe employees could take a little bit of comfort in the fact that they've never had to be in that kind of an environment. Is that fair, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's very fair, and I think that private industry is still facing that, right? So, and when the business isn't there, you leave. You're asked to leave, right? But the reason I picked this story really was the fact that, you know, you kind of read this before the election. We're now reading it after again, and the what we have started to see, I think, because you know, if federal government employees actually see that they are sort of on the table right now in terms of cuts to some of their benefits, they almost have to be. And I think that's what this article is saying, that the benefits are still pretty good. You can argue whether salary is the same, but sort of benefits are pretty good. And they're still compared to private sector in terms of retirement and whatnot. And so I think, you know, we've already started to see it this year, some retirements where people were staying in because the stock market was down, stock market came back up. And you started to see some of this big cliff of retirees actually start. And so I think that as we move into this next couple months, we'll continue to see that because we're not seeing, you know, raises. We're still seeing there's concern about benefits. I think there'll be people grandfathered in, and so it won't really matter. And kind of like you just mentioned, when the private sector is asked to leave, for the most part, you don't have these benefits in the back end, right? And so it hurts even worse. You don't get any pay unless you're at a certain age. And so, you know, I think it's just, you know, an issue around government morale. I think it's an issue in terms of we may actually have people start to retire again. And so what does that mean? And we certainly aren't backfilling the government workers with younger folks coming out of college, right, is because we've got sort of attrition going on. And so how does the government deal with the loss of knowledge, bring morale back up so that we're getting innovation and thinking about doing new things from the actual employees. So I think it's a real issue.
Josh, the knowledge management piece is one of the elements that Molly mentioned that I think is particularly troublesome for agencies. When someone leaves, how do you make sure that you get as much of their brain, of what's in their brain, documented so that that can be shared with other people after they're gone? That's one thing. And the morale is the other one. You can have a staff of really terrific, highly talented people, and if they feel beat up every day, I can't imagine how somebody in Congress would say that's what we want. We want a workforce full of people who are not really sure if there's a future doing what they're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly what Congress has been creating.
Right.
And it's been horrifying to watch the federal employee become the whipping boy for every problem that Congress has. We want to get reelected. Let's beat up on federal employees. That looks real good at home. So we're not going to give them raises. We're going to say they're incompetent. We're going to find one thing that, 12 people did and blame everybody in the agency for it. We've seen this across government. We're seeing that now with the military, with the generals. It's, every general must be, cheating on his wife. Why? Because it makes a good story and somebody needs the leverage. So I think Congress has got to back down a little bit and say, look, we need a good federal workforce. We need to give folks who work in the federal government a great mission, and we've got to support them in that mission. And we can't afford to lose the really good people that we have. So some of them are going to retire. And yeah, we got to figure out how to do that knowledge transfer and bring in smart young people. That will actually save us money, because smart young people are going to get paid less than older, experienced people. And, as we get from CSRS into FERS, we're also going to see that we're not our costs on the back end aren't as high.
And that's an experience that every public employee organization is dealing with all over the country. That's not peculiar to the federal workforce. My wife is a public school teacher in Montgomery County. It's the same deal there. I mean, the state of Maryland's dealing with the same thing. They're trying to figure out what to do about their pension plans, and this is something everybody's going to have to deal with.
Francis, you said that the federal employees haven't been through what the private sector has. The federal ones haven't, but the state and local ones have.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
I think
true.
When you look at the state and local government employees, they're getting fired en masse.
Yes.
They're getting their benefits and their salaries cut because, especially at the local level, they just don't have the money.
The idea of that is something that I'm not sure the federal government itself has dealt with, and Congress certainly hasn't dealt with it. But we're not that far away from that situation, really, are we? I mean, the idea where there just isn't – there's money because – the Fed can print more money if they want to print more money. But at some point, we do run the risk of that money not being really worth much of anything because there's too much of it in circulation. And then we really don't have the money anymore.
Well, I agree. But I think even this era of uncertainty, because there have been no action for a while, and this is going to continue for a little bit longer, right? We all know that. I think for the employees that are there, right, it's really hard to motivate them. Because they really don't know where to focus. And so then you get less value, right? And so it's sort of a real trickle-down effect, I think, in terms of government operations, looking for the innovation, sort of working on these challenges that we have. So all of this uncertainty, I think, is driving inaction, right? A little bit of stagnation. But it's not the government workers necessarily problem. It's not necessarily them. It's sort of the environment that everyone's working in right now.
It's this issue of, we don't have too many government workers. They're focused on the wrong thing. And I think that's part of the bigger issue of efficiency and effectiveness.
Is that a leadership problem, though, in the agencies, or is that another Congress problem?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I don't think there's any one person who can be blamed for that. Congress certainly hasn't made it easier, but the agencies really need to manage better and lead better, and they need to learn how to manage knowledge workers, because our management skills are based around managing factory workers, and they're not based around 21st century workers.
Molly, as a former agency executive, do you see any silver linings in these dark clouds? Are there any opportunities here, given all the kinds of times that we're in, the morale issues, all of that somebody could find some opportunity to gain an edge?
Well, I'll say the same thing that I would say to anyone in the private sector right now. Actually, some of these cloudy times are the best times to make change. It's when people are willing to to listen to things, and you can have new ideas. And these young people coming up who aren't wedded to things can be just great, fantastic resources for those. So actually, if you can motivate yourself, right, in these kind of times, these are the best times for innovation and change and to grow out of the stagnation area.
It's also the best time to hire smart people, especially young people.
More of them on the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Molly O'Neill's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is Budget Deal Poses Threat to Pay, Benefits, and Jobs, and you can read it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When the Federal News Countdown continues, the second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Josh Soslack. That's next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you shopping for insurance in the same place you go to watch cat videos? Don't spend hours trolling the internet looking for cheap dental or vision plans. Call the Government Employees Benefit Association. With GEBA, you'll work with knowledgeable representatives who understand the intricacies of your government benefits and lifestyle. Based on your needs, they can offer government employees, like you, basic and enhanced policies at competitive rates. They offer comprehensive dental plans that give members the freedom to choose a dentist they know and also the ability to roll over up to $1,000 in unused benefits. With GEBA's Vision Plan, members get the advantage of competitive rates with an extensive network of ophthalmologists, optometrists, opticians, and retailers, plus an annual pair of glasses or contact lenses. Open enrollment for dental and vision plans runs from November 12th to December 17th. For more information, visit GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126 to speak with a representative today and stop wasting time searching online.
For a faster, easier way for your agency to go green, choose GSA's Green Aisles, the custom online purchasing channels on GSA Advantage and GSA Global Supply. Each item in the Green Aisles is identified and labeled with environmental indicators like Energy Star, EPEAT, and more, so you can find the green products and services you need and meet all of your agency's sustainability requirements, environmental and economic. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, bangs, scores, and one. Okafor.
Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stump. Durant.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at washingtonwizards.com/tickets.
APWU Health Plan, your healthcare companion, features comprehensive benefits and Cigna's nationwide network of more than 1 million provider locations. It makes finding the right network provider so simple. Also, APWU Health Plan's diabetes management program saves members more than $150 a month. Learn more at APWUHP.com or call 800-PIC-APWU, your healthcare companion.
Better cholesterol. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, this is not a reason to celebrate with a half-pound cheeseburger, but Americans can be proud that we're doing better on controlling our cholesterol levels. Researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reviewed national survey data from 1988 to 2010. Researcher Margaret Carroll.
Total cholesterol declined in all adults, in men and in women. Bad cholesterol also declined, and the good cholesterol increased.
The declines in total and bad cholesterol may be due in part to people eating less trans fatty acid, but they're getting about as much saturated fat. A decrease in cigarette smoking is one possible explanation for the increase in the good cholesterol. The study is in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Clark Kendall of Kendall Capital, where he'll talk about his investment strategies and his financial planning practice. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. Please visit us on the web to learn more about the firm at ofplaw.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown, featuring the three most important federal news stories of the week. And Josh Soslak's second most important story is from the New York Times. The headline is Online Privacy Issue Also in Play in Petraeus Scandal. There are a whole lot of layers to this story that are titillating but not necessarily relevant to the federal employees. But this privacy issue is one that really is impacts anybody that deals with any kind of personal information, whether it's yours or somebody else's.
Yeah, I think the big issue we should be thinking about is not whether, you know, about General Petraeus' personal relationships, but the fact that anything and everything that we write in an email, even a private one, even in your Gmail account or your Hotmail account, may come out in an investigation, even if you're not the target of the investigation. I'm pretty confident General Allen's thinking about this right now. You know, this is emails have replaced letters, and they last forever. You know, historians used to look at the letters that people write to write history. I read a collection of letters between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, and there's one with Truman and Dean Acheson. They're fascinating. But now, you know, we're going to have these emails, which are not these kind of stately thoughts of, you know, it's the kind of stupid thing that I put in an email and just sent to somebody, not really thinking about it lasts forever.
When you were at EPA as the chief information officer, Molly, how much time did you have to spend thinking about things like e-discovery and so on when you were trying to develop policies and so forth?
All the time.
Yeah.
It's not just that. It's searching for records. It's doing all those things that, as you're talking about, even with the on the so the federal email in terms of looking for things. There's constant requests to look for communication, and email is part of that. So there's a lot of talk about, a lot of attention put on that. Same with e-discovery. So, I mean, it's not a new concept, but I think what this article raises is the fact that it's a nice reminder to know to people that what you put down there does live on forever, and it's not just in your federal accounts anymore. And, I mean, that was an issue back when I was in the federal government as well. So but people don't realize it. And I think part of it is exactly what you're saying, is that back when our forefathers were writing letters, they're very thoughtful and they're sitting right down and they, you know, but I think in today's world, when we fire off an email, we're rapidly doing things so fast, we're not thinking. We're not thinking about the end result.
It reminds me of an op-ed that Maureen Dowd wrote about the Anthony Weiner thing. And she said, you know, in the old days, if you wanted to send somebody a picture of yourself, you had to take the picture, take the film to the photo mat, have it developed, get the picture back, put an envelope, write the address, put a stamp on it, and take it to the post office. And somewhere in there, you might think, yeah, this isn't such a good idea. But now, you know, it's click, punch, gone.
Yep.
And all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is not so good.
And how many times have you actually, well, I'm not saying pictures, okay, but how many times have you, you know, even you've hit the button, you said, oh, I probably didn't.
That was a mistake.
That was probably a mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, if we all think about what we do that on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that recall email thing that they used to have was
never
a joke.
It's too late.
Never works.
Well, you know, it sent a message to everybody to recall it. Someone's, you know, Francis Rose would like to recall this email, which guarantees everyone is going to read it.
Absolutely. That's the surest way to make sure that everybody pays attention. Oh, wonder why he wants to recall it. What swear word did he put in it that he didn't want to? I guess the part of this that surprises me the most are what you're saying, Josh, is exactly right about how this stuff lives forever and all of that. I'm amazed in this case at the people who don't seem to know that and the level at which they operate on a daily basis in the federal government.
We don't know all the facts in this case, and so but it is clear that people made decisions about doing things without really thinking about what the consequences were to themselves and others. And I think that's the most important thing is, when you're looking at electronic communication, think about what you're saying. I listened to a talk by a woman who does social engagement issues. And what she was saying is that, you know, the online has created this ability for people to step away from what they say and not take personal responsibility for it. And we've gotten meaner and ruder. And you have to think about, would I put this on the front page of a newspaper? Would I say it on a radio show?
Mm-hmm.
And if you wouldn't, maybe you don't want to put it in an email.
The trick that that apparently General Petraeus and Ms. Broadwell used, where they logged into the same Gmail account and sent drafts to each other? I mean, really? You think nobody's going to figure that out?
Well, it's a terrorist trick. I mean, they learned it from the guys who do this. It's
but a whole bunch of other people did too.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like nobody else could figure that out.
I think it's in one of those spy movie ones. I can't remember which
really?
One they do it in. Yeah, the I mean, it wasn't the James Bond. It was the other ones.
Hmm.
But yeah, you know, the reality is, if you put it, you know, if you line the electrons up, they're not going anywhere. It's backed up somewhere.
What changes the mindset then, do you think, Molly? Because if the technology's not going to change, then you've got to change people's behavior to get them to stop doing it.
Part of it is stories like this, to remind everyone, to be frank, because I think you can hear it in your ethics training. You can be trained in it. You can understand it. But every time a story like this hits, it's a constant reminder to people on sort of social media and email, electronic records, and really what it gets down to, and the kind of trouble it can cause, because we're not thinking and we're trying to put everything down in writing, just in electronic format.
Is it as simple as this couldn't happen to me, or is it more complicated than that?
I think it's a series of things. I think there are some people who think it can't happen to me, and perhaps that was part of the issue here. You know, someone got caught up in a flaw in personality or something. I don't know. But I think it's a serious, some people, and I think for the younger generation, though, it's going to be even harder. If you think about our current leaders and sort of the generation they are, who aren't even as, in some cases, technically savvy or not used to putting down every single thought, you know, down in writing, whether it's on Twitter or whether it's, you know, in a Facebook account or email or something like that. Can you imagine what the millennials are going to be doing? So part of it is just, it's constant education. It's constant ethics training. It's constant understanding of the repercussions. It's just it's a barrage of things that have to occur.
I'm imagining about 20 years from now, maybe 25, as people start to come up for confirmations and some of the things that we'll see in some confirmation hearings.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, remember the mayor of Detroit went to jail over some texts that he sent to his girlfriend. This stuff, WikiLeaks taught us that, you know, people write stuff in cables that's embarrassing and they shouldn't have put it in there. It's not the fact that it was classified information. It's that they were talking about some foreign minister's, you know, sexual issues, and that shouldn't be in a State Department cable.
The second most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by Josh Soslak, is headlined, Online Privacy Issue Also in Play in Petraeus Scandal. It's a New York Times story, and you can read it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. That takes us up to the top of the charts. The most important story of the week from Josh and from Molly O'Neill, and the Federal News Countdown continues in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Dr. Robert Norris, Chief Architect, NGA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data in Government, Progress and Best Practices, sponsored by NetApp.
Over the next 5 to 10 years, what I see is that the intelligence community will be implementing its IT enterprise, which will allow for the sharing of data across agencies in an enhanced way. We'll see a sharing of infrastructure as far as cloud computing, networks, desktop environments.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
This is Mark Weber, President, NetApp, Public Sector. If you support a truly critical mission, the maintenance window for your storage infrastructure isn't just small, it's non-existent. If that's the case, how do you conduct upgrades, migrations, or backups without disruption? Here's the answer. Immortal data infrastructure from NetApp. That's always available. Then you can deliver non-disruptive operations for as long as you need your data.
Who's staying and who's going in President Barack Obama's second term? Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner have both said they're eyeing the exits, but who will fill their shoes is still up for debate. Federal News Radio's Cabinet Tracker follows the latest news on cabinet secretaries and other top-level officials that plan to leave the administration. Plus, we bring you the list of their potential replacements. It's all at federalnewsradio.com. Search Cabinet Tracker.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
The Agriculture Department has helped distribute more than 1 million pounds of food to victims and temporarily eased rules on food stamps. Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, Kevin Concannon.
In places like New York, for example, we have provided the authority to reissue the portion of benefits that food stamp recipients received for last month on the basis that a number of those households, their food was destroyed.
FederalNewsRadio.com/FederalDrive.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week, the selectors are Molly O'Neill and Josh Soslack, and we're up to
number one.
Molly O'Neill's most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is Pentagon reviewing legal and ethical conduct of senior officers. And it fits with Josh's choice for number two, Molly. I don't think anybody's really surprised by this. Secretary Panetta saying that they're going to look at the ethics training and procedures that are in place for high-level officers and install a new layer of accountability, it sounds like.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I picked the article, I mean, there was so much press this week on this, the whole issue, the Army generals, right? But I picked this because, to me, it's really a confidence in government issue again. So to me, this means, a couple months ago, we had sort of the civilian issues, especially around GSA, right? Now we've got sort of the Army generals who are having some ethical issues, whether it's different kind of ethical issues, right? And so to me, it's the point. This is why I thought it was an important story. It kind of brings back the fact that even post-elections, I think the public still doesn't have confidence in government. And one of the reasons is because these stories keep hitting. And so, yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense that that they're going to have a sweeping look at all the senior officers, right? And that's clearly warranted. But the other issue that I have is there's just so much bad press. There are some great generals out there, right? And I certainly hope that we don't say, people with flawed behaviors. Now there is the issue is, was anything shared from a national security, right? And those things are of critical concern, right? But the reality is generals are good leaders. They may have flaws in their personality, and how do you deal with it, right? So I kind of hate the fact that right now sort of people are Army general bashing in some ways too, right? Because there's some great leaders out there. And someone argued that some of the leaders here were great leaders. They may have made a really poor judgment and need to be reminded. Or maybe there are some through this look around them that maybe, had greater flaws than others and need to be retrained.
Frank Lloyd Wright was a brilliant architect. He was a horrible man. He left his wife and his kids and horrible stuff. Doesn't mean he wasn't a great architect. Dwight Eisenhower won World War II. He was apparently having an affair with his driver. Didn't affect the fact that, he kind of won the war. And, there's lots of stories of presidents, pretty much all of them up until recently. We know a lot about what they were doing and what they weren't doing. I think we have to change the way we look at these situations. And the issue is there a job issue here? If not, it's really a family issue. And I think it's not necessarily our business.
What does that do, though, about the confidence when it's a situation like a military leader where you're dependent on part of the compelling one of the compelling parts of their leadership ability is character, and whether somebody has the confidence of their character. If I'm going to follow this guy, is he going to lead me astray? And if there's a demonstration of a lack of character in personal life, not everybody can compartmentalize those, and not everybody perceives that somebody else can compartmentalize those.
I think attitudes are changing. I'm not sure that we're there yet. Certainly, if you look at these issues in other countries with leaders, it's not as big an issue because they think about it differently. I think with the military, the important question is, were they engaged in a relationship with someone under their command? Is there a workplace issue here? That's a serious issue. And there's been some accusations of, we know that rape is a huge issue in the military, and it needs to get addressed. So I think those issues are important. But when we start talking about something that's really not a job performance issue, then I think we have to start thinking about it differently.
So, but that's So as you look at this ethical review and that sort of where is that boundary? Because I personally think that the military officers have to have, you know, a higher level of in order to respect. I mean, it's a respect thing. It's because they're commanding troops. It's all those things. But you're absolutely right. So how do you draw the difference between, as I say, a personal flaw? And there's leaders at, you know, at the four-star level that I think no matter what they do, there's always going to be that look. And so I'm not sure if what General Allen was doing is the same as General Petraeus, maybe, because the national security thing is. But because they're doing something, every email is looked at, and some of it's getting leaked out. And I think there's a little bit of privacy issue there, too. So this is a really difficult issue to deal with. I think
the whole problem that I see here is it revolves though around the character and leadership issue. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think back to military leaders who had demonstrable public demonstrations of lack of character in their personal lives and who were able to continue to lead in the professionally effectively. None are coming to mind, and that's potentially what I think it sounds like Secretary Panetta is trying to get at here with this ethics review that's outlined in this article.
I mean, look at presidents who, you know, they're commander in chief, so okay, we'll give you that piece of it, but they're also clearly leading the country. And I think that, you know, we used to kind of look past some of those issues. We didn't make a big deal about them. They happened. But we didn't dig into them. And now that we dig into them, now we have to make a big deal about it. And I think it's a conscious decision on behalf of the American people that we're not as interested in their personal issues. We all have personal flaws. But
Molly doesn't.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Molly's perfect.
You and I do, Frank.
Oh.
But
how much time do you have?
Yeah. I think we've got to change how we look at it, and that's the only way we get around this, because if we're going to have some litmus test that you can never have done anything wrong, they're going to be, you know, Molly's going to be the only general left.
Yes.
So what else?
Now that's a country I want to live in.
All right.
You know, and how do you do that? I mean, look at great generals, not necessarily the people that, you know, you'd want to be having an ethical leadership discussion with.
But this brings, I mean, the whole issue that everything is now available. You don't have private lives anymore,
yeah,
right?
And that's so the big difference.
Back in the days when you think about these generals, the reality is we didn't know, right?
The people under their commands didn't necessarily know what kind of behavior they were engaging in.
We didn't report it, too.
Right.
I mean,
correct.
There's a lot of stuff we didn't talk about. You know,
yes.
Look at Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, there's lots of stuff about Franklin Roosevelt that was never reported to the American people. The reporters knew it, but it wasn't an issue because it didn't affect his job performance.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Molly O'Neill, is from the Washington Post. It's headlined, Pentagon Reviewing Legal and Ethical Conduct of Senior Officers, and it's linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Josh Soslak's number one most important story of the week is next to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Are you shopping for insurance in the same place you go to watch cat videos? Don't spend hours trolling the internet looking for cheap dental or vision plans. Call the Government Employees Benefit Association. With GEBA, you'll work with knowledgeable representatives who understand the intricacies of your government benefits and lifestyle. Based on your needs, they can offer government employees, like you, basic and enhanced policies at competitive rates. They offer comprehensive dental plans that give members the freedom to choose a dentist they know and also the ability to roll over up to $1,000 in unused benefits. With GEBA's Vision Plan, members get the advantage of competitive rates with an extensive network of ophthalmologists, optometrists, opticians, and retailers, plus an annual pair of glasses or contact lenses. Open enrollment for dental and vision plans runs from November 12th to December 17th. For more information, visit GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126 to speak with a representative today and stop wasting time searching online.
Navy football is moving full speed ahead, and you won't want to miss the last home game of the season at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. Watch the midshipmen as they take on Texas State Saturday, November 17th at 3:30 p.m. Join thousands of boys, girls, and family members at the annual Scout Day. Be sure to get your seats today and make every game day your day in Annapolis. Call 1-800-US-4-NAVY or log on to NavySports.com now. That's Navy and Texas State, Saturday, November 17th. Navy football, full speed ahead.
This is John Gilroy from Armature and host of Federal Tech Talk. After almost 300 interviews, I've had many guests who talk about cutting-edge technology and agile software development. How would you like to be part of a fast-paced team with an agile approach to projects? We need talent. We seek experts in .NET, WCF, jQuery, and HTML5. Take advantage of this opportunity where you can make a difference. For more information, go to armaturecorp.com or send your resume to radiojobs@armaturecorp.com.
Life is long and filled with challenges. Navigating these can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Hi, this is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has been leading military personnel through difficult times to a more secure future with our low-cost life insurance and personal approach. Our policies are available to all members of the armed forces. For a free quote, call 1-877-398-2263 or find us online at AFMA.com today. That's AAFMAA.com.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight is the Alzheimer's Association, the world leader in Alzheimer's research and support. Every 68 seconds, someone in America develops Alzheimer's, a disease with no prevention, no cure, or way to even slow it down. The Alzheimer's Association is here for people with Alzheimer's, their families, and caregivers. Whether you need help or want to help, the Alzheimer's Association is the place to turn. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Community Spotlight charities are fed by Papa John's.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. On the Federal News Countdown this week, the most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Josh Soslack, is headlined, Sandy, Fiscal Cliff, and Election Revive Global Warming Talk, Even Carbon Tax Reconsidered. And the story from the Associated Press says climate change is suddenly a hot topic again. Where did this come from, Josh? Is it because of all the weather things, do you think, lately?
It's absolutely. So write this down, Francis, because this is my 50-year prediction. I believe that Al Gore is not going to get remembered for losing to George Bush by 7 votes in Texas or even claiming to invent the Internet. He will be remembered for the guy who rang the bell about climate change, because climate change is coming into its own. And we're now seeing Bloomberg comes out right before the election and says, I've changed who I'm voting for, who I support, because climate change is the number one national issue, and I think this guy's better at it. This is going to change how government operates. It's going to change it one of two ways. Either we're going to change government through regulation, through action, to address some of the issues of climate change. Whether that's possible or not is a fight other people can have on a different show. But we're either going to do that or we're going to be dealing with the consequences of it, and maybe both. And I think it's going to change the way that government operates, because climate change is really happening and we're starting to see the impacts of it.
Molly, you are a veteran of an agency that paid a little bit of attention to this particular issue. What does all of this conversation mean to somebody like you that used to work at the EPA?
Well, to me, right now it's political posturing. Just because we've got a re-election. This was hot in the first administration, the first term agenda. It's the time where people can rally against it and see if there will be more support than there was before. So to me, I think it will be addressed in some way. I'm not sure it will be addressed through a tax, to be frank. I personally think incentives and clean energy and things like that are the way to go versus tax, but that's a personal issue for me. So I don't know. I think a lot of it's political posturing right now. And, you know, if you look at what's happened in Europe and some of the other things, there's ways to incentivize for making things a lot cleaner, to reduce carbon, and do a lot of other things. But as a society, we have real issues because, you know, if we think about sort of energy consumption and carbon, I mean, we're the U.S. society. We all like our big flat screen TVs that are pulling down energy, you know, a lot of energy. We like our cars. We like all of these things. So I think this issue is not sure I buy into the total prediction, except to say I think right now it's political posturing. We'll see if people are ready for these kinds of things. I think, like I say, I think we want the economy to grow a little bit, but I think that what the administration will end up doing is trying to find ways to actually make energy a lot cleaner.
And my fear, Josh, is that regardless of what you believe on the political or scientific spectrum, because there's still argument about that, most people don't want to do the things that would be required of them. You know, Molly's right. There are a lot of if people wanted to do the things that were required of them, there wouldn't have had to have been a law requiring people to switch to CFL light bulbs and eliminating the old incandescent kind. People would have just said, oh, well, this is much better for the environment and I can save money long term doing it, too. So I'm not going to buy those anymore. And they would wither on the vine and die. That's not what happened. Same thing with some of the situation with the electric cars. People just don't want them.
It's true. And, you know, when we were younger, we ate a lot of pizza and drank a lot of beer because no matter what anybody
when we were
told
younger,
us. Hey, you know.
What about last weekend?
Well, okay, but not every day.
Fair enough.
And the Twinkie guys are going out of business, so, you know, that's a whole
That's the saddest news of the day.
But here's the thing. It's a pay me now or pay me later problem. And climate change, you know, is serious. It's going to be it is beginning to affect us in real ways. We're starting to see the impact of it. Sea rise, the melt of the global ice Arctic ice. It's affecting us. We're going to see it, and we're going to have to deal with it. And you know, Mother Nature is a better debt collector than even the Sopranos.
That's a great line.
Yeah, you know. They might break your arm or burn down your house. Mother Nature's going to do it to your whole town.
That's pretty amazing stuff. Josh Soslak's first most important federal news story of the week, number one choice, is from the Associated Press. The headline is Sandy and Fiscal Cliff and Election Revive Global Warming Talk, Even Carbon Tax Reconsidered. It's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Terrific countdown again, as always, when both of you are on the show. Josh, good to see you. Travel safe. Molly, happy Thanksgiving to you and to you as you travel too, Josh. Thanks very much for being on the program. We'll archive this week's Federal News Countdown, as we do every week, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. No countdown next week because of the holiday, so we'll return the last Friday of November on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.